Hello and welcome to a new edition of the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. Last night was the election. The rest of this week is going to be a little bit crazy for me, so we're making the first mega episode of the year. We used to do these all the time on this show. We're going to be talking about the last game the Chiefs played and the next game that they will be playing. We're going to recap the Chiefs' win over the Jags, and we're going to preview the Chiefs' game against the Carolina Panthers coming up on Sunday. But before we get into that, I want to say thank you to people who support this show financially through Patreon.com. At Patreon.com/RTK, you can support the show. Different amounts of money each month. The $20 group, as always, Ty Declare at TyDeclare44. Andy Simpson, Randy Singh at Randy_Singh_. Ray Hines at Big Turf Guy. Derek Vaughn at D_Vaughn88. $10 group is Christine Roadlander at C. Roadlander and Todd Sullivan at Tito Sullivino. The $5 group is Josh Beadle at patreon.com/RTK. Thank you for your financial support. Let's talk about the Chiefs and the Jaguars. Kansas City Chiefs 19, Jacksonville Jaguars 14. You wanted Nick Foles, didn't you? You wanted to see him. You wanted to see him against a terrible team with a bad defense and a bad offense that wasn't going to get the defense off the field. You wanted to see him in an ideal scenario at home. He did not have the number one running back and number one receiver on this team, but you wanted Nick Foles. Alex Smith was inactive for this game. Spencer Ware was inactive for this game, as was DJ White and Bishop Sankey. No Alex Smith, no Spencer Ware. Jeremy Maclin later left with an injury. Travis Kelce later left with a flourish. You wanted Nick Foles, man. You had a nice, happy marriage with Alex Smith. Nick Foles was mysterious and new and different. You go on and you almost cheat on Alex Smith. You get so close, but by 5 points in this game, you didn't fracture your marriage. You didn't throw your multi-year marriage to the wolves by losing to the Jags at home. But you, man, it was close. Man, you thought about it. You got way too close. You had a good thing going with Alex Smith. It almost cost you because of your lusting after a bigger arm. But the Kansas City Chiefs do escape Arrowhead with a victory against one of the worst teams in the league. And we'll break it down here now. But this is what you wanted, right? At least now we know. One of the best things from this game is that there was no quarterback controversy afterwards. I understand wanting to see Nick Foles in a game and wanting to, like, make sure that he's not actually going to be able to run Andy Reid's system better than Alex Smith. But he looked bad. He looked incompetent in this game consistently. A couple of nice plays and a lot of mistakes, and really overall just a stagnant offense. And I think that's what you should have expected. I think that's what I've expected. I think that's what I've said. Nick Foles, the Rams ended up releasing him. The Rams, who keep starting Case Keenum, can't get Jared Goff on the field. The Rams let Nick Foles go. He couldn't stay on the field for the Rams last year over Case Keenum. A team so quarterback starved that they went and had to draft somebody. Had to trade up, not just somebody, traded up to get the number one overall pick. The team needed a quarterback. They couldn't find a spot for Nick Foles. So I think you should have expected this to be what Nick Foles looked like with the Chiefs, and it was, and it is. This is what Nick Foles is. He came into the Colts game, held his own, advanced the offense well. That's his job. And he came into this game, and the Chiefs beat the Jaguars. I don't have any doubt in my mind that if this was a playoff game, Alex Smith would have played. He was getting kind of a voluntary day off to make sure, like, his head was right. And I'm totally fine with that decision by Andy Reid because it worked. Losing this game would have been disastrous. So, I don't really want to break down this game. Maybe I still should. If you really enjoy this part of the show, then let me know. But I'm looking. I take notes of the whole script of the game as it goes on. And I'm looking at it right now, and it's not that interesting. So I'm going to go through it and try to pick out the highlights instead of going through as much as I usually do. Ramiq Wilson had a great play in the first drive of the Jags offense. Ramiq Wilson has been very good since getting cut early in the season. He's really come back. He's looked like a different player. And some people have speculated, well, you know, maybe him getting cut sparked him up a little bit and sort of made him, I don't know, go to a different level. Maybe he's just better than we thought. Maybe this time to develop has really been good for him. But basically, since like the moment they brought him back, he's been very, very good following the injury. I believe he was brought back after Justin March went to IR. It might have even been Josh Malga earlier in the year. I can't remember that. Nick Foles, the first Nick Foles drive of the day after the Jaguars punt Foles drops just a perfect teardrop over the shoulder to the outstretched arms of Travis Kelce for a 23-yard gain. That was the first play of the game, the first pass of the game for Nick Foles. It was so pretty. It just perfectly executed. Then it was followed up by this exact problem. This is how it was always going to work. West ran for two, then Foles missed Macklin about 8 yards down the field across the middle. On third and eight, he threw a quick tight end screen to Kelce, got to the Chiefs to fourth and inches, and actually got the first down there. After DeAnthony Thomas going in motion and a handoff to West. But this is those first two plays, I wrote this down. It said that first pass that he made, that teardrop over the shoulder of Travis Kelce, that perfect throw. Smith doesn't make that deep pass. On that pass to Macklin, Alex Smith doesn't make that mistake. He doesn't miss that pass. And that's kind of what Nick Foles is going to do here. I said at the time the Chiefs should go for it, they did. They got the first down. Then on first down, a false start on Mitchell Schwartz moved him back. Foles avoided a sack, which was nice. Stepped up under pressure, heaved it to Albert Wilson, but it hit Prince Amukamara in the chest. This one was an interception, but another jag ran into Amukamara and knocked the ball out. It was horrendous. It was an absolute, like, punt pick. Just heaving it down towards the end zone to let the Jags catch it, but they dropped it. They jagged it up. Then a timeout on offense with 9:24 left in the first quarter. Less than really five and a half minutes into the game, a timeout on offense for some reason. New quarterback, same team for the Chiefs. Second and 15, a delayed handoff to West for four. Then on third and 11, a really low throw to Albert Wilson. Nearly another interception, frankly. The Chiefs punt after a drive with two good plays. This is how it worked. This whole game, it's how it's always going to be with Nick Foles. Foles' first throw was a real, like, Smith wouldn't have done that kind of moment. Well, this is exciting and fun and new, which was followed by a Smith would not have done that moment over and over. He is not the fit for Andy Reid's offense like Alex Smith is, because he doesn't play the same way at all. He makes more big plays for the better and for the worse. But even that is a little bit of a false narrative, because throughout this game, going up against the Jaguars, the big plays were unbelievably few and far between for a guy who's supposed to be more dynamic. He does not make the Chiefs a more dynamic or a more effective offense or even a more threatening offense. He makes it a little bit more threatening for purely just throwing the deep ball, but he didn't even throw the deep ball all that well. That one great pass to Tyreek Hill against the Colts was not a great pass. It was a great catch. The throw to Kelce's hard off the game was great. I can't remember another play the rest of the game that, I guess, the touchdown to Albert Wilson later, maybe. But I can think of less than five, definitely maybe less than three passes in this game. It's like, oh man, Nick Foles has really made a play with his arm. So I might even have to walk back that the idea that Nick Foles is a bigger play guy on offense. Especially last year, whenever Alex Smith was running the ball well, Alex Smith would have more big, like, second and 17 type of conversions. 17 is too long, but he would run for 17 yards out of the pocket, or he would find Macklin or Kelce streaking across the middle. Those they might be smaller plays sometimes, but those plays are happening so much more often that it's simply inarguable that Alex Smith is the better option at quarterback here, and this is proven over and over throughout this Jags game. The Jags get the ball back, and Allen Robinson couldn't haul in a ball on third and seven that was a little bit overthrown, but it was really a nice throw. Robinson probably should have been able to haul it in, but if Bortles took a little bit off of it, it would have been trouble for the Chiefs. Three plays, three first downs for the Jags, though. Then three plays and then a punt was how that drive went, with some small chunks and then having another three plays and giving it right back. But that deep ball was super-duper dangerous and would have been a disaster. So the Jags punt back. DeMarcus Robinson gets a holding penalty, and the Chiefs have to start on the 10-yard line. Second and nine, Tyreek Hill gets a little bit of a sweep and takes it for 16. Second and six after a West run was moved to second and 11 after an Albert Wilson false start. West pick up six, and then on third and five, tell me how many things, keep count. Count how many things in this sentence make me uncomfortable. Third and five, Nick Foles drops back and hugely overthrows Albert Wilson in double coverage. I think there are five things there that make me upset. Nick Foles dropping back, overthrowing Albert Wilson in double coverage. I think those are my five. the Chiefs punt it back, but on the punt, the Chiefs were redeemed here. Daniel Sorensen and DJ Alexander combined to strip the ball from the return man. James O'Shaughnessy recovered it, and the Chiefs got the ball back on the 23-yard line. The best Chiefs offensive play of the day. On 1st and 10, play-action pass rolled right, incomplete, to Kelce on the sideline. But on 2nd and 10, Foles aired it out and hit an open Albert Wilson in stride in the end zone for a touchdown. That was the other great throw from Foles on the day. It was a nice route from Wilson on a good matchup with a linebacker. It's not the easiest way to get points, but I'll take it there by punting and having to recover the fumble. I don't know why Nick Foles went to Albert Wilson so much early on. Later he did it because Albert Wilson was running Jeremy Maclin's routes. But maybe Nick Foles and Albert Wilson have kind of like a second team chemistry here. I am not an Albert Wilson fan at this point in his career. But Nick Foles constantly looked to him. And on the day, let's see if I can find his actual receiving numbers, because it wasn't pretty. He did not lead the team in receiving. Travis Kelce did. The box score, Nick Foles ended this game 20 for 33 for 187 yards and a touchdown, taking two sacks. He had a QBR. If you put anything into QBR, which out of 100 on ESPN, he had a QBR of 17.5. Jarkandrick West jumping the shark a little bit here. Jumping the shark, Andrick. That wasn't on purpose, but it worked. Jumping the gun is actually what I meant. Jumping the gun a little bit. Jarkandrick West, 13 carries for 39 yards, an ineffective day for him. Receiving, Albert Wilson caught three passes for 42 yards and one touchdown, his longest being a 23-yarder. He had eight targets, three receptions. That is not a good stat line. His best stat there is just that he ended up hauling in that touchdown, which is big. Without that touchdown, he's probably lose this game. It's not pretty. Also, I think Wilson had one reception after that touchdown the rest of the game, even though he got another handful of targets. The Jags started with poor field position after a penalty on the kickoff return after the Chiefs made it 7-0. And then Chris Ivory turned the corner, got past Gaines and Derek Johnson right over Ron Parker. And eventually got chased out by a big man after a 42-yard gain. This was a big play and a frustrating one. Then on 2nd and 3, Bortles went to Yeldon short. He beat Derek Johnson. Chris Jones went down on the play. The Jags gained 11. The Chiefs challenge was actually that he was actually down 7 yards shorter, which was true. He was, but it was still a first down, so whatever. But Chris Jones going down on the play was terrifying. He came back later in the game, not even a whole lot later, which was great because that would have been an unbelievable loss for Team Artie missing Alan Bailey. And Chris Jones seems to be taking such great strides in his rookie season here. So Ramique Wilson then stops Chris Ivory for a loss of 3 on 2nd and 10. A really, really nice play there from a guy, again, who wasn't on the team a few weeks ago. Was on the team some last year, practice squad here and there, and now is making waves on this defense, on a defense that needs somebody beside Derek Johnson. End of the first quarter came, and then on 3rd and 13, Bortles ran for 12, but the Jags challenged a spot of the ball. The ruling stood. 4th and 1 at the 30, Bortles shot deep and went through the hands of Allen Hurns, and the Jags turned the ball over. I think it was the right move to go for it there, but TJ Yeldon and Chris Ivory had been running over the Chiefs' defense, which is concerning to me. The Chiefs' run defense looking so poor in the first half. Against better teams, this is a problem we've talked about 1,000 times now this year. Against better teams, you can't get off that kind of slow start. They got away with it against Jacksonville because they're playing Jacksonville. So, through the hands of Allen Hurns, that was a little bit of a confusing play call. The Jags get the ball back on downs. God, this drive. 1st and 10, Foles took a handoff, faked a handoff to nobody, threw it to nobody. And Mitch Schwartz was called for holding somebody. And then the Chiefs are dealing with 1st and 20. Niall Davis went to the left for nothing. 2nd and 20, a short check down to Davis, who got killed and picked up 7. 3rd and 13, a neutral zone infraction, got the Chiefs to 3rd and 8. Paul Posluszny, though, got to Foles completely untouched, and he threw it short to Albert Wilson, the Chiefs punt. Nice special teams coverage again, but that was really it. That was the only bright spot on that drive. In fact, I usually feel more prepared than this, but I just remembered that I forgot to ever check out one of the most devastating and sort of terrifying stats from this game about the Chiefs, and I don't know what the final numbers were, but I know for a while, I believe the Chiefs ended up being 0-for-10 on third down conversions. They ended the game. This is amazing. Okay, so I've been bobbling around now. If you zoned out because I'm an idiot, focus back in here to hear this stat about Nick Foles' Kansas City Chiefs. Third down efficiency, the Chiefs were 1-for-14. 1 for 14 on third down. They converted their only fourth down conversion attempt. Mentioned that earlier. The Chiefs had 10 first downs in this game and 13 unconverted third downs. I mean, that's tremendous. That is not tremendous in a good way, but like a horrendous thing to realize actually had to happen. The game all around had 11 punts, both teams combined. Man, just a real drag for the Chiefs offense. I hate reliving this game. But back on defense, one of the highlights here, D. Ford was not fooled by a play-action pass. He wrapped up Blake Bortles. Bortles threw it away. That was a nice play from D. Ford, and it wasn't a sack. That's what I want to see from him consistently. That's how he makes me a believer, is by harassing quarterbacks in non-obvious passing scenarios, in not being fooled by play-actions, and not necessarily even having to get the sack, just being there in the back of the quarterback all day long. He did that several times. D. Ford now, spoiler alert, is third in the NFL in total sacks. And the Chiefs already had their bye week. I mean, that's amazing. He's behind Von Miller and the pass rusher out of Buffalo, I believe, whose name escapes me currently. He's third in the NFL in sacks right now with 9. That's amazing. Even though some of them, my critiques of him have been that a lot of his sacks have come late in the game against teams that were losing, and he was just harassing obvious passing situations, quarterbacks in obvious passing situations. But in this game, he broke away from that model, I think, in my mind, for the first time. So I'm very encouraged by D. Ford right now. Next play, Jay Howard got some light pressure on Bortles. Ramique Wilson read Bortles' eyes, got right under the passing lane, and picked it off. After a short return and a penalty for a low block by Bortles, the Chiefs got the ball on the Jaguars 14. A stupendous play again by Ramique Wilson, who was having a great day, maybe having a great few weeks. He looks like a different player than when we saw him last. And so the Chiefs have the ball on the Jaguars 14. And then Andy Reid screwed it up. And I hate all of it. God. Why would you ever hand the ball to Albert Wilson? In any way. For any reason. In any context. It's just, that's the drinking game, but in that case, there's not a game, you just drink until you're numb. Nothing confuses me more about Andy Reid, maybe in this world, than Andy Reid's insistence on handing the ball to Albert Wilson. So, the Chiefs ran some, and maybe that would have been Jeremy Maclin's run, or his play, if his hamstring was feeling better, that would have also been stupid. Some stupid double option, end around, trash garbage that ended with Albert Wilson running out of bounds 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage, which is unbelievable. I mean, to lose 5 yards running out of bounds. It's unfathomable to me. I can only call it trash garbage. That's the only thing I have. Then on 2nd and 15, Nick Foles hit Tyreek Hill for 4 yards. So the Chiefs almost got back to where they started the drive. 3rd and 11. Foles went to Chris Conley for 7 yards, but it wasn't like a 7-yard slant with like a little bit of a seam, and maybe he could have turned it up and gotten the first down. This was a 7-yard pass that never had a hope of getting the first down. He was surrounded by Jags. He just caught the 7-yard pass and went down. There was no optimism there for anything. Poor play calling, poor decision making, just a disaster. Santos hit the 26-yard field goal. Chiefs win at 10-0. So infuriating. The Jags hit the ball. On 2nd and 1, the Chiefs defense stuffed Chris Ivory. Then on 3rd and 1, Marcus Peters got to Chris Ivory and took him down on his own in the backfield. Nobody wants to throw towards Marcus Peters anymore, so he's getting the ball back in other ways for the Chiefs. That was really impressive. For a guy who's so good at playing the ball, so good at being a cover corner, for him to read that situation and to go get Chris Ivory in the backfield, that's another instance where I'm watching a guy who is in his second year, and I'm trying to see what is he going to be beyond the thing that we've already seen him be. And to be an elite defensive player, really, any position, you have to be able to make that close-in, backfield, read the handoff on 3rd and short kind of tackle. And we don't expect that from a lot of corners. I have vague memories. I don't remember Sean Smith doing it very often. On screens, yes, but not like in a backfield tackle. I have a vague memory, for some reason, of Brandon Flowers being pretty good at that. I could be making all of that up. I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something. But to see a guy who is such an elite cover corner already at such a young age, to see him understand the setup of that play and to go and single-handedly stop Chris Ivory in the backfield on third and one, super-duper encouraging. Jags punt, Chiefs get the ball back, Hill's taken down from behind, the Chiefs start on the 20, Charcandrick West picked up the first down on second and one, then on first and 10, Foles floated a short one to Kelsey with a rusher in his face, Kelsey picked up 13, then Foles went short to West in traffic, incomplete, another short pass to Kelsey in space, this one only goes for two, then on third and 8, Nick Foles had Albert Wilson cutting back beyond the first down marker, but Nick Foles just missed him, and there's no love in this world. Chiefs punt. Eric Berry popped Marcus Lee after an 11-yard gain, probably the hardest hit of the game. First down, D Ford got pressure, crushed Blake Bortles, but Bortles had Mercedes Lewis on Steven Nelson and threw a dart for 17 yards. But again, D Ford instilling the fear of D Ford in the mind of Blake Bortles here, and just being there, and whenever you are a pass rusher close to a quarterback, and certainly when you're a pass rusher hitting a quarterback, you are affecting the pass. And you're affecting how they stand in the pocket later in the game. This is what was encouraging for me about D Ford. Bortles kept the Jags moving, ended up at the 34-yard line with 50 seconds left in the half, but D Ford saw the bat signal, finally took Bortles the whole way down, although the next play ruined everything. Bortles hit Marquise Lee in front of Marcus Peters. He couldn't make the tackle. Ron Parker nudged him. Lee stepped out of bounds. Daniel Sorensen hit him out of bounds and got a 15-yard penalty. Then we saw that Lee was actually down right after he caught it, but it wasn't a huge turnaround in momentum or anything because the Jags still got that personal foul penalty. The Jags were at the 10, at the 10.5. So not technically a goal-to-go situation. First down. Pressured by Tomba, Bortles escaped the man for 5. Second and 5, Bortles threw it to Robinson, and Gaines jumped the route. Third and 5, almost a pick, by the way. Third and 5 from the 6, rushed 4, Bortles threw it to Hearns, covered by Steven Nelson. Nelson got a huggy pass interference call. It's fine that they called it. It wasn't super blatant in my mind, certainly not as blatant as what Travis Kelce later got ejected for, but whatever. We'll get to that one. Just hold your horses. First and goal from the 1, handoff to Yeldon. Stop at the goal line. Jags use their last timeout. 12 seconds left. Shotgun. Bortles rolled right, threw down the sideline, and hit Ron Parker in the hands. That one needed to be a pick. Parker dropped that one. Then third down. 7 seconds left. Shotgun. Bortles dropped back, went to the back of the end zone, and hit Allen Robinson for the touchdown. That made it 10-7 Chiefs going into the half. After the half, the Chiefs got the ball. Got to 3rd and 9, Foles threw it to Anthony Sherman at the line of scrimmage. It went for 6 yards. They punted. Whee! Wonderful, wonderful endeavor on that offensive side. Allen Hearns went down to the Jags whenever the Jags got the ball back, but they were moving the ball. D Ford sacked Blake Bortles for a loss of 7. Then on 3rd and 17, Phillip Gaines popped the ball out of TJ Yeldon's arms, and Steven Nelson recovered it. The Chiefs got great field position again, starting with the ball on the 38-yard line after a great play from D Ford, followed by a great play from Phillip Gaines and a great recovery by Steven Nelson. All three of those guys really had nice games and have both had increasingly nice seasons. Steven Nelson gets picked on whenever he's lined up outside, which is why I consistently want to scream. Phillip Gaines is a very good number two corner. Steven Nelson is developing into a very nice slot guy. Whenever Nelson has to move to the outside, we have trouble. But this is probably the best game for Ramique Wilson, the best game for D Ford, and the best game for Steven Nelson as a Chief, if I had to judge it off the top of my head, which is kind of amazing because the game was so sloppy and so ugly, but those guys all on defense had nice days. Chiefs get the fumble, start with the ball on the 38, West ran into a wall for a loss of 1, something else happened that I just like zoned out through because the offense was that anemic at this point, then Foles threw a worthless, deepish shot to Demetrius Harris. The Jaguars could afford to sell out to stop the run in this case because the Chiefs were not a threat to put together a passing game in this case whatsoever. Personally, I blame Alex Smith. Cairo Santos came in and was the saving grace of another disastrous offensive showing. 51-yard field goal was good. 13-7 Chiefs. They picked up 5 yards after getting a turnover. That is not an offense that's going to win you any football games. That was the moment when the Chiefs got to 0-8 on third downs, and Jeremy Macklin was ruled out for the rest of the game because of his hamstring injury. A horrendous pass by Blake Bortles as the Jags get the ball back. Bounced out of the hands of a diving Steven Nelson. Later, Bortles had Robinson wide open, streaking down the field, and just overthrew him. Then on 2nd and 10, the defensive line blew up a Chris Ivory run for a loss of 3. And then on 3rd and 13, D Ford and Chris Jones pressured Blake Bortles to the point of throwing the ball away. Jags punt it back with another nice defensive stand there. 37-yard return by Tyreek Hill got boosted 10 more yards after a holding penalty was called on the Jags. The Chiefs started with the ball on the Jaguars' 35-yard line. Great field position again. I wonder how this ended up. I'm going to guess off the foot of Cairo Santos. Oh, spoiler alert, that's what happened. A short pass went for 5 yards to Charkandrick West. Then Foles hit Chris Conley for about 4 yards. Then Conley took it about 4 yards downfield, and then Chris Conley took it for 12. First down, 5 yards to Hill. Second and five, Foles had Tyreek Hill wide open in the end zone and just threw the ball like 5 feet behind him. Then on third and five, a pass to Albert Wilson went for 3 yards, and I wanted my life to end. And a 24-yard field goal was good by Santos. That's a 16-7 lead for the Chiefs, because field goals are what we do now. The Jags had a great kickoff return, but the Chiefs started really bottling up the run game at this point. Bortles could not find anybody until 2nd and 20. Allen Robinson picked up 19. They converted 3rd and 1 on a pass to Mercedes Lewis for 6. But Dee Ford got to Bortles again, forced another horrible Bortles pass. The Jaguars ended up having to settle for a field goal and missed it. Chiefs get the ball back again with nice-ish field position still. On 2nd and 5, Foles hit Wilson pretty short. He took it for 16. That was nice. That was Wilson's third catch of the day. 3rd and 7, Foles threw it short to Kelsey, who kept it up for 14 yards and got the first down. Niall Davis came in and ran it for 6. Then on 2nd and 4, a jump ball went to Kelsey in the end zone, and Kelsey got, like, actually mugged going up for the pass. He didn't get the call, so Kelsey threw a flag on the referee. That's a thing that actually happened. But he was young at the ref, back and forth, walking away. He threw his towel up in the air as if he was throwing a flag on the referee. Then the ref, well, I think, had already thrown a flag on him for talking to him. Yeah, I think that's it, actually. I think the ref threw a flag for jawing at him. Then Kelsey threw his towel up in the air as if he was throwing a flag on the ref. And then another ref came, and then that ref threw his hat in the air, and another ref threw another flag in the air. There was my favorite vine. There was a vine of it. This is that if it wasn't for football, this would just be a contest between three men to see who could throw the strangest object into the sky. It's my favorite vine. I retweeted that. You can follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe for that kind of stupendous humor during game day. So Kelsey gets ejected, and the Chiefs have a 3rd and 34, because both of those 15-yard penalties against Travis Kelsey stayed against the Chiefs and moved them back 30 yards. So that wasn't great, but it was 3rd and 4 from the 42-yard line. And Foles threw it several yards behind the line of scrimmage to Charkandrick West, but he turned it into a 25-yard gain with some really nice blocking, getting the Chiefs back into field goal range. The 36-yard field goal was good. 19-7 Chiefs at this point. By the way, and Kelsey tweeted about this after the game, what Kelsey did was stupid. He did get mugged. He should have absolutely gotten the call. And I couldn't help but laugh a little bit by the means that Travis Kelsey got ejected through, by just the spectacle of it. Of course, if that happens early in the game and the Chiefs lose, and we could say, well, they would have won this game with Travis Kelsey. Or if that penalty moved them out of field goal range and they lost by 3, well, they would have lost. Winning this game, I think, gives us permission to laugh a little bit about what Kelsey did. I'm not concerned about him getting suspended. He'll probably get fined. But it was very frustrating, because a team with so few weapons already, having obviously no Jamal Charles, no Spencer Ware, no Jimmy Maclin, no Alex Smith, having a team down to Travis Kelsey and Albert Wilson and Chris Conley as the main target getters in this game, that's not a great time for your number one guy to get a stupid penalty to get him ejected. So, of course, the timing of it was awful. The actual behavior was a pain. I'm sorry, Charkandrick West, by the way, was the third leading receiver in this game. But Kelsey, Wilson, and Conley led the team in receiving among non-running backs. Having your number one target go out because he couldn't keep his flag in his belt or keep his mouth shut against a ref, that's a huge pain. At the same time, because we're through it now, I think you can watch it and laugh a little bit. But please, Travis Kelsey, don't do that again. So it's 19-7 Chiefs, and the Jags had their best play of the day from their own 45. Marquise Lee got past Marcus Peters and almost got in for a touchdown on a 51-yard play. Then Chris Ivory was stopped on first down and fumbled it into the end zone on second down. He was reaching for the goal line, and Marcus Peters recovered it here. He was reaching for the goal line, and as he was breaking the plane, he was losing possession of the ball. It was ruled a fumble on the field. I could have absolutely seen this call going either way, If I would have had to have made the call, I think I would have said that he did break the plane before losing possession of the ball, but maybe he was in the act of losing possession of the ball as he was crossing the plane. It was certainly not super clear either direction. And I think what the refs just did was stick with the call from they made on the field, which was that he did lose possession of the ball before breaking the plane. So the Chiefs recovered it. They did nothing with it. They actually moved backwards, and Colquitt punted it back to the Jags. But that was a big break for the Chiefs. Then the Jags turned together a nice little drive that ended with a short pass from Bortles, turning into a 13-yard T.J. Yeldon touchdown. So it became 19-14 Chiefs at this point. Then, with about 4 minutes left, the Chiefs' offense needed to put together a drive without its number one quarterback, without its number one running back, without its number one wide receiver, or without its number one tight end, and they did not do that. On first, it was a horrendous drive. When you're in a 4 minute drill, you're trying to eat up those 4 minutes because you're playing with a lead. You just have to move, pin the Jags back if you have to punt eventually, eat up some of the clock. The Chiefs totally failed at that with a very understaffed offense. So with about 4 minutes left here, the Chiefs had a first. They on first down, Davis ran for four, kept the clock running. Second down, Nick Foles nearly threw a pick six, incomplete, stops the clock. Third down and six, Nick Foles takes a sack. Oh boy, and the Chiefs punt it. Then the Jags started on the 35-yard line. On first down, it was a nice defense by Eric Berry on Mercedes Lewis. Second down, D Ford. I don't know why I made Nick Foles a pass rusher. D Ford flushed Bortles out. Bortles ran for 26 and got whacked out of bounds by Eric Berry. First down to the Chiefs 40, a 9-yard pass to Julius Thomas. Second one, though, incomplete to Lee, coverage by Gaines. Third and one, handoff to TJ Yeldon, stuffed in the backfield by Dontari Poe. And then fourth and three, Bortles went back to pass. A great play by Steven Nelson to break up the pass to Walters, and the Jags turn it over on downs. On second and nine, a 14-yard run by Charkandrick West turned it around and ended the game. The Chiefs win a really, really ugly one with an understaffed offense, 19-14. The defense did its part here, giving up 7 points in each half to the Jags. That's fine. Giving up 14 points to the Jaguars is acceptable, even though it got a little bit too close to that TJ Yeldon touchdown, and at the end, it was all very nerve-wracking. But the defense since the bye week, as they've done every week since the bye week, the defense did their part here. The offense was the one that nearly let the team down. But with such an understaffed team, this was a good way to get away with a win. A little bit of breaking news here as I'm doing the show. I'll get to your takes and takeaways here in just a moment. Justin Houston looks like he's going to be activated after practice today, which makes sense. He has to be activated by the deadline today to keep him as an active member of the team after being on the physically unable to perform list up until this point. He should be activated today. Don't really expect him to be actually on the field, certainly not this week, maybe not particularly soon, a couple weeks out. I'm still just hoping he's 100% by the Broncos game. That would be ideal to me. But he should be back after practice today. And Spencer Ware cleared concussion protocol, and he is back in practice as well. Let's check out those takes and takeaways. Over on Twitter, at JB Briscoe, after every single game I ask you to tweet me your takes and takeaways. What did you take away from this game? What are your hot sports takes for whatever particular reason? Just tweet at me after I ask for them on Twitter. I'll say, give me your, at JB Briscoe, hashtag RTKTT, give me your takes and takeaways. Here's what I got after this game. First up, from Big Turf Guy, Ray Hines. The offensive line had to step up with Smith and Ware out. They flopped. Foles was barely serviceable. West and Hill did nothing. D Ford was great. The offensive line was not exceptional in this game. I don't think it was a giant step back. Maybe I'm watching the game wrong. Maybe I follow the ball too much. But the way I was watching it, the offensive line wasn't taking great strides, but a couple of the best plays of the day were made by the offensive line. I think overall they were plenty serviceable. I think they were made to look much worse by having a slightly inferior running back and a severely inferior quarterback. From Chiefly Bacon at 3 Gravy Cats, he said, Kelce was stupid. That said, I get his frustration. The second half calls were very one-sided. I hope I will never blame the refs for a loss or whatever. There are a lot of ways to win and lose games, but I can look at specific calls. I agree, especially in that case with Kelce. That call was certainly missed. Kevin T. Priester at KT Priest on Twitter said, Foles is not who they thought he was, and we let him off the hook. I think actually Foles is what we thought he was. He's a guy who can win a game coming in as a backup. He might be able to win one start with the whenever a team has a chance to prepare for him. I think that's actually exactly what I thought Foles was. Also, Kevin wrote, you know, in my Dennis Green voice, which is how I read it the first time anyway, but says RIP, I forgot that Dennis Green died. That's depressing. Don Beal at Don Beal 32, don't like the Kelce ejection, needs to be smarter, but with two players for Jacksonville, taunting gotta offset that massive third and 34. I can live with that. At least having one of those penalties, also have one of those against the Jags with them also throwing flags in the air, not actually throwing anything, just mimicking it. Maybe so. It was a missed call. Kelce needed to be cooler in that situation. That's easy. Also from Don, he said it was fun and all, but no more quarterback controversy. Foles is straight up garbage. I'm glad to. I don't know that Don talking just directly to you. I'm not saying that you thought Nick Foles was the second coming of Tom Brady or Christ, either one. But I don't remember what you thought or what you've said previously. However, some people were so excited about Nick Foles, and I understand wanting to just see different quarterbacks. I get it. Nick Foles has now won more games as a Chiefs starter than any quarterback the Chiefs have drafted since Brody Croyle. Or before Brody Croyle? I don't know. I get the unrest around the Chiefs quarterback position. I do. But man, for those of you who are really, really jacked about the Nick Foles experience, I tried to warn you. Also from Don, last one from Don, says this team needs to get healthy quick. Also, Foles is garbage again. Makes me appreciate Alex, just terrible. I'm glad that if nothing else from this game, we all learned to be able to be a little happier, excuse me, with our Alex Smith marriage. From Billy, at Chocolate Shake, takeaways, we treated this team like it was a bye week, the offense played like hell, and the defense played great and awful at times. Overall, I'm gonna totally give the defense a passing grade here. They get a nice, like, B. Not a B plus or B minus, just a B performance from the defense here, because even whenever they made mistakes, they didn't let the Jags turn them into points very often. So even though, again, also a better team takes advantage of more of those mistakes, the defense played down to the Jags, but they passed here. The offense absolutely failed this game, and yeah, treating it like a bye week, at least for Alex Smith, is exactly what the Chiefs did. They said, listen, you just take this week off, we should be fine, and they were fine in a way, but man, it was ugly. Back to Kevin. There's no way we beat the Panthers with this type of play on the field. Missed tackles, poor run defense, we can't run the ball, bad third down conversion. Yes, I know, you're absolutely right. The Chiefs, without their starting quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and for part of the game, tight end, can definitely not beat the Panthers this way. Can't beat many teams this way. In fact, maybe it might just be like the Jags and the Browns and the Titans or something that the Chiefs can actually beat that way. You're absolutely right. Good news is, the reason I'm not panicking is because we're never going to see this Chiefs roster again. That the team that played on Sunday is not going to be a Chiefs team again. From Matthew Livingston, he said he'll take the W all day, even though it was gross. He just tweeted, Arrowhead, blah. Forgot to add, I'll take the W all day. From Samir Hinjua, who refuses to tell me how I should pronounce his name, so I'm going to keep screwing it up, I'm sorry. He said, doesn't the poor offensive showing point to play calling and not Alex Smith or Nick Foles? I know we're missing major studs, but Reed! This is interesting. I don't know. Andy Reed was obviously, he had the whole week to prepare a game plan for Nick Foles and to play towards Nick Foles' strengths. From hearing him talk earlier in the week, it sounds like Andy Reed wasn't particularly concerned with that he was more concerned with sticking with the offense that quote-unquote works. It didn't work in this game on any level. So I think there was a game plan failure to playing to Nick Foles' strengths. On the other hand, Nick Foles was bad in this game, and they didn't have most of their weapons. So I think you can put some of that blame in both places, where Andy Reid had poor red zone play calling, had a poor game plan to maximize Nick Foles, and Nick Foles didn't do anything to make any of that better. And in Indianapolis, there was no game plan for Nick Foles. It was just strictly backup plan, and that worked. So I think Nick Foles also just had a bad day, paired with poor play calling. From Derek Vaughn, at D_Vaughn88, two more for D, defense got the W, Foles was awful, give it up for Amik, dude is a stud. Yes, and I feel like now I'm fighting Derek. I feel like I have to fight Derek every show, because he was on the D Ford train earlier than I was, and I'm going to maintain my little bit of cynicism, because consistency is the difference between a guy who is a developmental pass rusher and a starting pass rusher or an elite pass rusher. At this point, in 2016, I think Dee Ford is, you would be happy to have Dee Ford as your number two pass rusher. And not number two like your backup, but your second best outside pass rusher. Right now, he's the best one on this team. If Justin Houston can come back healthy and doesn't have a Jamaal Charles type of return with his knee, having Houston and Ford as your 1-2 and having Tamba Hali be coming in for a solid handful of snaps each game, especially whenever Houston's getting back up to speed, or Houston's the third guy. But once Houston's back as the number one guy, having all three of those guys in kind of those NASCAR packages where you're bringing extra speed, being able to bring, say, Ford and Tamba on one side and Justin Houston on the other side when you're maybe playing without Ron Parker leaves the field for that or whatever to balance out the personnel. Whenever something like that is happening, you have to be thrilled about your chances of getting to the quarterback. Even whenever you're just running two of them, to be able to have a guy constantly catching his breath on the sideline, to always have a fresh guy ready to bring in, whatever, that's a huge advantage. So I'm very happy with Dee Ford's development and with how it looks like he can fit into a three-man rotation with him being the number two guy, surpassing Tamba Hali, which is a big step for him. So yes, a very nice day for Dee Ford. In my opinion, his best day as a Chief. From Ty Declare, at Ty Declare 44, enough of the Foles talk. I want Reed to stand up, clear his throat, and say, "That's why," and then walk out. Andy Reid didn't say, "That's why we've been wrong with Alex Smith," but we all heard it. We all heard that through the gameplay. From Stucky, at Captain Stucky, dropped a pan on the edge of my toe at halftime, minor contusion, past concussion protocol, I should be good to go next week. I really like that tweet. I like that tweet a lot. Thank you, Stucky. He also said, with a lot of emojis from Stucky, Ford, Nelson, defense, thumbs up, Hill. Is that a rock on? This is hard. Yeah, the rock on hand for Tyreek Hill. Macklin, confused thinking face emoji. Kelsey, furious pouting red face emoji. Offense, poop emoji. I don't know if that translates to radio or not. Ford, Nelson, defense, thumbs up, Hill, rock on, Macklin, confused, Kelsey, angry, offense, poop. The offense looked good as good as an 80-year-old toothless homeless woman on a 10-day bender. That translates to radio. There's no picture of that, but I can imagine it. And so that is not a good offense by Captain Stucky's assessment. Who also is... This must be the first time that I've seen a tweet from Stucky. Because his avatar, or her avatar, I guess, I don't know. Is Stucky a gender-neutral name? I think it is. Stucky's avatar is I think is a plush doll of the rabbit from Bambi. So I'm very confused. I'm very, very confused. Stucky, if you're listening, please tell me more about yourself. From Ray Hines, 21 of 30, 187 yards, one touchdown, no picks for Foles. A very Smith stat line. Smith has Warren Macklin. Don't worry, Alex Nation, the Hall of Famer, will be back. I don't think this was a very Alex Smith stat line. And if it maybe if you can fool yourself into saying it's an Alex Smith stat line, it was definitely not an Alex Smith performance. Because the thing in this game that I don't think I've ever seen from an Alex Smith team is whatever that stat was about third down conversion, but 1 in 14. Going 1 in 14 on third downs. I don't know how often this has happened, but a team with that low of a percentage of third down conversions wins football games unbelievably rarely. I also tweeted out and got some feedback on, I just realized that I think the AFC West has four of the seven best teams in the AFC right now. You can give me New England, Pittsburgh, and Baltimore if you want. Nobody else in the AFC is better than the Chiefs, the Broncos, the Raiders, and the Chargers. Those four teams are all very good. If you don't believe in Oakland if you don't believe in Pittsburgh or Baltimore, and you think San Diego could hold with both of those teams, you could say that the AFC West, along with the Patriots, have the five best teams in the AFC. That's crazy. Also, Ben Almquist pointed out that the Chiefs having four major injuries in 1 week, Smith, Ware, Anger, and Macklin, was really a lot to deal with, and it was. This is based off a tweet from Chris Clark, NFL, on Twitter. He said that the Chiefs should be upset, and that people listening to the show and calling into the postgame show should be upset, because the game had no business being that close. I think it did have some business being that close, because you are not only acknowledging the gap between Nick Foles and Alex Smith, you are dealing with the loss of several starters in that week. So I'm having a little bit of a hard time still figuring out exactly how to feel about the game. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I was at the time. At this point, I think it's something that you chalk up and move on from. Matthew Livingston tweeted a nice picture of Arrowhead along with the hashtag RTKT team. Said an ugly win, but a W nonetheless. Beautiful day at Arrowhead Stadium. You'll take ugly wins. I can deal with that for sure. Christian Roadlander said, "Am I right? All points that we had from the defense getting turnovers. Don't know why Bray wasn't put in. It couldn't have been worse than Foles. It could have been worse than Foles because Foles wasn't throwing interceptions." And a couple of bad interceptions in this game are all it would have had to have taken for the Jags to actually win it. I understand playing the riskier move with not playing the riskier move of Tyler Bray and just keeping Nick Foles, even though it was a really, really ugly game to watch. Let's hope that next Sunday is better. Noon on Sunday on CBS, the Kansas City Chiefs, 6-2, will take on the Carolina Panthers, which are 3-5. Both teams have 2-2 records in these matchups. The Chiefs are 2-2 away from Arrowhead, both of their losses coming on the road, and the Panthers are 2-2 at home, two of their three wins coming in Carolina. ESPN's matchup predictor has the Panthers at a 60% likelihood of winning this game. I believe that 538 has the Chiefs as a 52% favorite to win this game, so I will take the Panthers plus 20 electoral votes. Get it, because 538's polls were way off. I mean, like, not as off as a lot of people were about Trump's winnability of the election. But they were also wrong with, okay. I promised myself before the show I wasn't going to talk about the election, except for to say that that's one reason why I'm doing one mega show this week, and unless I could make Chiefs and election jokes at the same time. I feel like that was a pretty bipartisan election joke. That joke wasn't even about the election. That was a joke about polling. I don't know what you could possibly be worried about there. I feel like I've made a couple of these points for several weeks in a row now, and if you listened to last week's show, which if you didn't, you should go do, at least listen to the last little bit to understand what I'm going at here, I went through the rest of the Chiefs' schedule, and the Chiefs are playing a lot of good offenses with bad defenses, and the Carolina Panthers are doing a nice job of maintaining that status quo for what the Chiefs have to deal with. The Panthers this year are 9th in the league at 25.5 points per game on offense. For comparison, the Chiefs are 15th, 23.3 points per game, averaging on offense. So 9th in the league at scoring points per game. On defense, Carolina is 23rd at giving up points in the league, averaging a given up 25.8 points allowed each game this season. And I think points per game is probably my favorite stat to sort of do a macro look at a matchup. But at the same time, as we get later into the season, those become less and less meaningful. The Panthers started out with one win in their first 6 games. They started 1-5. But as we look at the current state of NFL teams, especially at this point in the season, you can only look back so far. These last 2 weeks for the Panthers, even go back to the last 3 weeks. 3 weeks ago, they lost in New Orleans, but they scored 38 points. Against the Cardinals at home 2 weeks ago, they won 30-20. And then they won in L.A. 13-10. Their offense has been kind of all over the place. Big win against the Saints, a 30-point total against the Cardinals. The week before the Saints game, they scored 14 points in a loss to the Buccaneers at home. I'm just replaying old shows now, because I think I said this about the Raiders game. I think I actually had the Chiefs losing to the Raiders. But I said this about the Saints game, and I said this about the Colts game, and I said it in a way maybe about the Jags game. I didn't get the Jags game very right. But the Colts game and the Saints game especially, and this is how it worked against the Raiders, I think the Chiefs defense travels here. As they did in Oakland, I think it can perform on the road. And I think the Chiefs defense, as it did all of these wins since the bye week, I think the Chiefs defense carries the team. I think Alex Smith comes back and plays pretty well. I'm hoping we see Spencer Ware and Jeremy Mack in return. If both of those guys are ruled out, then my emotions on this game do shift a little bit. My prediction might even shift. But right now, I see the Panthers at plus 3 points on ESPN. The Panthers at minus 3 points. The Chiefs plus 3 points here. I love that. I think the Chiefs actually do go into Carolina and win this game here. And it's mostly because the Panthers have been so up and down this year, especially on offense. I mean, the defense has been pretty consistently. It was great last year. It's really struggled this year. But the Panthers put up giant. They put up 46 in week two against the Niners. They put up 33 at Atlanta, 38 at New Orleans, 30 against the Cardinals. Those are some bad defenses. Only 20 against the Broncos, 10 against the Vikings, 14 against the Buccaneers, 13 against the Rams. Whenever the Panthers face good defenses, their offense struggles. And you could argue maybe that for the Chiefs, their offense struggles against better defenses, which is pretty simple math. That makes sense. But I'm not all that concerned about what the Chiefs actually have to do to keep their offense rolling here. For several weeks in a row, whenever they've had their starters, the Chiefs have pulled through just fine. As far as how to best try to attack the Panthers' defense, it's not going to be on the ground for the first time this season. I'm not going to say run the ball here. They need to establish a little bit of a running presence, but the Panthers are allowing the third fewest yards per game on the ground this year at 77.5. This is a point of strength for the Panthers. For a defense giving up a lot of points, they're not giving up a lot of yards on the ground. Part of the reason is because you can definitely beat them through the air. The Carolina Panthers are giving up the 18th most passing yards per game this year at 363.5 yards. That's better than what the Chiefs give up through the air, though. So yardage by yardage, the Panthers' defense seems to be in better shape than their actual points per game ranking would give them. Where does that leave you then? It leaves you having to maximize your field position, which the Chiefs have done a very good job of so far this year, and it creating turnovers. Cam Newton's had a bizarre year. The whole Panthers has had a bizarre year, to the point where I think they're so volatile that this is probably the hardest game for me to predict since the Raiders game, and now even the Raiders game, because it went the way it did, seems a little bit more level-headed. The Panthers are one of the hardest teams in the NFL to pin down for me. Offensively, they're 11th in passing yards per game that they've racked up, almost 370 yards per game, really 369.9. So I'm sure they're going to go ahead and run that up to 370. Cam Newton is moving the ball through the air pretty well, and I would argue that their best weapons are on the ground. They lost Jonathan Stewart for a little while, but he might be their best player right now, and the Panthers are 9th in the league at running the ball at 116 yards per game. I don't know why it was so hard to read that. The stats point to the Panthers having a more productive offense than they've had, especially whenever you look at the ways and the times that the Panthers have scored a lot or a few points. They rack up big yards against bad defenses. Whenever they're really challenged, so far, they've folded. They beat the Rams because the Rams can only score 10 points. I'm going to say that is because the Rams' offense is horrendous, not because the Panthers' defense has found its life. I think the Chiefs win this game by holding their own on defense, even in Carolina. I love the Chiefs plus 3 points. I think the defense does its job once again, but in this case, their job going up against an offense with bigger potential than certainly the Jags. I can't have the Chiefs giving up fewer points than that. To look back at what the Chiefs have given up these last few weeks since the bye week, and just to try to gauge what happens next after the Colts game or before the Colts game, I said that I think the Chiefs are going to continue adding on to their offensive totals. I don't think they're going to top the 30 points they had at Indy in this game with the return of Alex Smith, because I don't know about Jeremy Maclin and Spencer Ware, although Ware is supposedly being cleared again. I think the offense shows up again, though. And I think the Panthers offense, gives the defense a little bit more of a challenge than it looked like the Raiders gave them. But as the pass rush improves here, as there's a tiny, tiny chance of Justin Houston showing up, with a team that's won 4 straight games out of the bye week, going to Carolina, not the Carolina team we saw last year. There's no Josh Norman here. I mean, it's Cam Newton and Kelvin Benjamin and Jonathan Stewart on offense. But the team has been so up and down. I think the Chiefs go back to the pace, to the data set that they were getting clumped in with the Raiders, Saints, and Colts wins. I say they're in the mid to high 20s. Give me 24-17 Chiefs win in Carolina. I think I'm giving coaching advantages across the board to Andy Reid right now, and for what they did to the Colts and the Saints and the Raiders after the bye week, as teams are starting to form their identities here, I think they're going to be able to look on both sides of the ball at where the Panthers have struggled, and there are plenty of struggles to pick on. They're going to look at where the Panthers have struggled, they're going to exploit those things. I think the Chiefs leave Carolina with a victory and continue to climb up the AFC West. It's hard to believe, but I think with the Buccaneers coming to Arrowhead the week after, the Chiefs are going to be 7-2 in my mind. And I think they beat the Buccaneers, and then they're 8-2 going to Denver. Or something will go terribly, terribly wrong. or even, frankly, losing this game in Carolina, I'm backtracking on my disaster call. Losing this game in Carolina would not be the actual worst possible thing. It would stink, it would be disappointing, I'd be bummed out because I think it's a very winnable game against a team that doesn't really have a very solidified identity, other than they beat really bad teams and lose to good teams. It's going to be close, it's going to be a hard-fought game, I don't feel great, I'm not super confident about it. But I think they win, and if they don't win, then they're 6-3 with all of their losses this year coming from the NFC South from the Panthers, the AFC South with the Texans, and the AFC North with the Steelers. Two AFC losses, an NFC loss, none of them in the division. If the Chiefs can hold their own in the AFC West, they're going to win the division. I think they're going to beat the Raiders again. I said this at the beginning of the year. One of my bold predictions or whatever, the beginning of this season, the Chiefs would beat the Raiders two times. They won in Oakland because it was coming off of a bye week. Andy Reid's great off a bye. They're going to win in Kansas City because it's Thursday night football. It is so hard to win on the road against evenly matched teams in Thursday night football games. They have the Buccaneers. They have the Broncos on the road, which I actually think is after the Buccaneers week. I think it's actually after the Buccaneers. Excuse me. After the Broncos bye week, I believe. I can double check that. That would be a huge challenge for the Chiefs. Coming off of not having having so many games in a row, the Broncos having a week of rest, a week for them to scheme up for the Chiefs would be a big challenge. And going to Denver, yeah, the Chiefs are going to Denver after the Broncos bye week. That's a game they probably drop, which is why these games against the Jags and the Falcons and the Panthers, these out of division games that they have a chance in, or with the Jags case, needed to win. It's why those start to feel a little bit more important. And I'm not trying to say this isn't an important game. If it is a win, here's some really bad logic as I wrap this up. If they win this game, it's a big win. If they lose this game, it's not a big loss. Because it's a game where they're an evenly seeming matched team because they're going on the road. The Panthers can be really good or really bad. A 6-3 Chiefs team is not out of it, but a 7-2 Chiefs team is a real contender. And again, it's the Bucs at home, then it's at the Broncos, then it's at the Falcons. A couple of games in a row that I think they probably lose. And you get the Raiders at home on a short week. The Titans at home. You're ending the season with Broncos and Chargers games. I'm feeling uncomfortably good about the future of this Chiefs team, especially if they can win in Carolina. It won't be stealing a game. It'll be beating up on a team that will beat up on you. If they're as unstable as the Panthers are right now, I think the Chiefs go to Carolina and get the win. Something I didn't have time to get to last week, and I'm going to have to go rapid fire here at the end. Just some questions. If you ever have questions through the week that you want to get my take on, you can send them to me at JB Briscoe, and I will always try to get to those. Keyshawn Brown had a few before the last show. He said, could Ford keep this pace up when Houston returns? No, probably not as far as production as numbers, but they would both become more effective with a productive guy across from them. That's why Tomba and Houston have been so dangerous for all these years. It's hard to double team an elite pass rusher. It's impossible to double team two elite pass rushers. So I'm not very concerned about D Ford's stats. If he can keep up the kind of production as far as a play-to-play basis and not on a statistical basis, then the Chiefs are going to be in stupendous shape. So is this explosive offense only up against bad teams, or is it totally legit? I'll say this, it's definitely legit against bad teams, which is an important place to start. If your offense can't show up against bad teams, then that is a very scary sign about the future of your team. I think it's also going to be legit against, I mean, this offense, quote unquote, this offense was coming after the Colts game. It's legit against bad offenses. I think it will hold its own in most cases against decent teams. And the defense is going to have to win them still. And then Keyshawn has pointed this out a couple times, and I love this comparison. He said, as Tyreek Hill opened up the offense, could he be our version of DeSean Jackson? DeSean Jackson is 5'10", 175 pounds. Tyreek Hill is 5'10", 185 pounds. Tyreek Hill is a stockier version of DeSean Jackson. He's not the pure wide receiver, so he's a different kind of guy to watch. And a different set of expectations have been put on him. But using him like DeSean Jackson here and there, while also using him to take some carries out of the backfield, to run some stuff out of the slot, I love that idea. I love using the fastest guy on your team to stretch the field. I think if you have that guy, why wouldn't you use him that way? That's going to do it for this episode of the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on ArrowheadAddict.com. A double feature today is what I should have called it at the beginning of the show, but I'll call it now. A double feature version of RTK. Recapping the Jags game, looking ahead to this game in Carolina. Let me know what you think about this game, how you're feeling ahead of the game. And then afterwards, on Sunday, at JB Briscoe on Twitter, I will tweet out and ask for your takes and takeaways. And I want to hear what it is that you think about the Chiefs before the game. Just let me know. And then after the game, I'll be collecting all of those to talk about them on the show and get your voice into the show, which I'm always happy to do. As always, thank you for listening. Thank you for your support at patreon.com/RTK, for following me on Twitter at JB Briscoe, facebook.com/RTK Show, for your comments on Arrowhead Addict, for sharing the show with your friends. Subscribe to the show on your phone with whatever app you want. And there we go. I got all of my self-promotion today and the intro and the outro. That's pretty impressive, right? Move it out to the boundaries. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week. Bye, Mom.